I am going to just kick us off for today by saying that we have a very prestigious guest on our little podcast this evening. We're lucky to be joined by Jane Clark, who is one of the vice presidents of FVE and so much more, but she's going to tell us a little bit more about that later. Jane, hi, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Oh, hi, Juliet. Now I'm feeling a bit of pressure. Prestigious is not normally what I think of myself as. It's really, really lovely to be here, though. Thank you.
Super exciting to have you. So I want to give our listeners just a little bit of the backstory of how we got to this podcast episode, because Jane and I have known each other for a couple of years now, and we were at a stakeholder event and started geeking out on mind discussions and like Daniel Kahneman and thinking fast and thinking slow. And somehow we ended up on the topic of shame. And we decided to do a podcast on it, which is not normally, you know, your first podcast episode.
Well, I do wonder how we got there, but I think that was what was so joyful about the geeking out. I'm just really fascinated about how the mind works, and then actually thinking about how that applies to me and to my profession. So, yeah, really excited to explore it a little bit more.
Well, and I think too, most of our listeners are coming from the veterinary space, but for anyone who isn't already aware of the fact, you know, we all had a little bit more knowledge after COVID-19 about how the need for well-being and mental health in healthcare professions could be improved a lot. And that story has been true for veterinary medicine for decades, honestly, right? Am I explaining that well?
I think you are, Julie, and, you know, I'm actually going to go back. We haven't really talked about my career pathway yet, but one of the really important well-being moments for me was being involved in the response to the foot and mouth disease outbreak in the UK in 2001. Incredible work pressures, incredible challenges. And that, I think, has also set the government veterinary services into a better place, because I understand that they have to look after their teams.
Absolutely. I think it's really critical. And when we start to dive into the discussions around well-being and mental health, it's easy to jump straight to how can we fix it? But for me, it was a bit of a self journey to understand, you know, where is it originating? And I became really obsessed is not the right word, but really fascinated by Brené Brown's work. Yeah. In my younger years. Around shame. And so for our listeners, I'm going to link that in the podcast description. There's a short TED Talk where she talks about this a little bit. But basically, just to quote her, you know, shame is a focus on self. Guilt is different. Guilt is a focus on behavior. So shame is I am bad, where guilt is I made an error, or I did something bad, or I made a mistake. So again, very Brené Brown, absolute quote here. Shame is the gremlin that says, I'm not good enough, or who do you think you are? And when you look at that impact on mental health, well-being for any profession, but definitely within veterinary medicine, it's tangible. I know I couldn't feel it. I know colleagues of mine who have felt it. And so I just wanted to kind of have a starting point for our listeners to jump into this conversation with us. And, you know, is that a fair place to start, Jane? Shall I just ask you right off the bat? One of my questions is, as vets in different parts of the profession, how do we relate to shame?
Yeah, let's jump in. That's what we're here for, isn't it? And I've never been one to knowingly not jump into something interesting. Perhaps I could speak a little bit about being a vet in a different part of the profession. We've already hinted at that. I'm working as a government vet. Maybe we'll explore the different bits of the profession that I've worked in later on. But what I found is that when I listened to that sort of definition of shame, I was like, actually, you know what? I think it's expected of me, certainly in the UK, to be feeling a little shameful that I'm not a proper vet. Those of you who are listening to the podcast won't see, I just use little inverted commas. So basically, what we used to find is that I've just been joined by my feline supervisor, by the way. You may hear her meowing because she's quite near to the microphone. She's called Willow. We'll maybe have to put a photo up of her.
We'll do that.
So, yes, Julie, where was I? We often speak about government vets and we say, I'm a vet. And what is often happening is that people go, but I work for the government. And I'm really, really passionate about saying, no, I'm a vet and I work for the government. I bring so much of my veterinary skills, knowledge, experience, the way I use my veterinary brain to make a difference on not just a single animal or even a herd, but a local, national, international basis. And I do think that this is something that perhaps the veterinary profession and even wider society sort of almost expects me to feel shame, and I don't feel it, but it took me a while to get there. I did used to say, but I work for the government. Now I'm like, and I work for the government, and we do so much.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I do really want to dive into the career pathways. And I think that there's so much you have to say about this. So I confessed to Jane before we hit record that prior to this, I had not Googled her, and now I have. And there's just so much. You've done so much, Jane, in different parts of the world, in different parts of the profession. And I know you have a lot to say about this. So tell us more.
Oh my goodness, that is always a dangerous thing, Julie. For our listeners, we're a little bit worried that we might still be talking. It's actually 4:30 here in the UK in the afternoon, and we might still be talking at 6 o'clock if I'm just given free rein. But I did want to just mention my career path because it's certainly non-traditional. And I think it's really important then for us to move on to what that actually means for work pressures and how it actually relates to the wider profession as well and some of our shared challenges. So I showed early on that I wasn't necessarily going to be all that traditional. I went, when I graduated, to Oman, working on a little project, postgraduate project there. But it was just the start of my desire to travel and do different things. I didn't enjoy being in practice. I found especially, and it's for another podcast, I think, but I found working in small businesses not necessarily good to mental well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And then I traveled around the world and I loved that. I worked in Hong Kong, I worked in New Zealand, and then I came back. So what am I going to do? I did wonder about being... doing a legal conversion course, because I loved that idea of, you know, sort of understanding law and you know, actually delivering against those legal frameworks. And then foot and mouth disease in 2001 in the UK. So many vets in the UK changed their career pathways as a result of that. We really understood the value that we bring, the importance of our role, but also, you know, there's some really challenging moments in dealing with an exotic motor file for pursuits. People's livelihoods are being affected, and you have to apply all the same skills that our vets in clinical practice, our colleagues in clinical practice, have to do. And then sometimes it's really stressful. But my career didn't just stop there. It went into all sorts of different parts of government. So I've worked in what's called the Animal and Plant Health Agency, but all sorts of areas there. I've worked in policy in DEFRA. And now, as you know, Julie, I'm actually the Director of Veterinary Services for the Food Standards Agency. And that's a particular area that most people have no idea about this work.
Mm-hmm.
And our job is really important. What it does is it supports food safety. Our vets are in every abattoir every day. helping to support that industry, underpin animal welfare outcomes, check on animal health, and then actually enable those businesses to export and to place on the market, so food. It's a really positive relationship when it's going well.
Mm. And you touched on, I think this is one of the linchpins of the whole topic within veterinary medicine. You touched on work pressures, and you know, people in the general public they might have some familiarity with some of the work pressures in clinical practice, right? Like, the ability to euthanize is a gift when it is the appropriate choice for humane welfare. That doesn't mean it's easy. That doesn't mean it's emotionally easy and doesn't create any work pressure. But then there's completely other scales of these types of work pressures, which we so rarely get to talk about. And I mean, you've started to mention them. Do you want to tell us more about what those are?
Yeah, really happy to. I think it's sometimes a matter of scale, but it's also sometimes a matter of shame and pride for the people we're talking to and working with. Mm-hmm. So one of the examples would be animal welfare. In almost every case where there is an outcome of poor animal welfare on a farm or even in companion animals, which my work hasn't really covered, usually people are not intending to be cruel. There, of course, are some people who are. And let's be really clear about that, but that's different. A lot of people do not understand that what they're doing is creating a bad welfare situation. So if you try to tell them that, they can get very defensive, they can get very upset, and they themselves can feel quite a lot of shame. And so you have to really be able to understand human nature and be able to work with people, be able to talk to people and to help them to help themselves as well.
Yeah.
So that's just one area of animal welfare. I think when it comes to sort of the really, really pressurized situations as well, you know, you have veterinarians, as I said, in every abattoir every day. If they were to suspect an exotic notable disease like foot and mouth disease, as happened in 2001, a vet had to make a decision to ask the food business operator to stop the line. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, in an abattoir which is incredibly busy and has animals arriving all the time, and in order to protect their welfare, you need to get them through the system in a really calm and humane way. Stopping the line is a big deal. Mm. And you have to make those sorts of decisions. So as you can imagine, lots of pressure, lots of what happens if I get this wrong?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the gremlin versus the I got this wrong, but does it become I'm bad because I didn't know what to do?
Yes, yes. And this, I think, not only any veterinarian can relate to that question, right? This is a human question. We all experience this question.
Yeah.
I like the chance, though, to get to highlight, particularly for, you know, younger vets or students or even clients, whether they're farmers or whether they're pet owners or whether they're companies, that this is a big part of our profession and that we're faced with at a really high level. And it is different than human medicine because you don't make those same calls. So the work pressures, you know, are far beyond what any single career pathway necessarily engages with on a day-to-day basis. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's both fair and quite insightful. And what I would also add is often in for example, human medicine, perhaps less in dentistry and so on, but if you're in human medicine, you have a whole team around you and a whole series of places at which decisions and checks and balances are in place. And I guess that's not always the case, especially for a government vet. You know, they are there by themselves making that decision. Yes, they have recourse to a whole support network behind them. And that's what I've talked about and why that support network is so important. But often it's just them standing in front of an animal going, I think this animal has foot and mouth disease. I think this animal's welfare has been compromised. And that all of their experience needs to be communicated, and communication is so important there.
And you said something that I think is really essential, and that, you know, we look at well-being, that the discussions that go on around well-being that I have been privy to in veterinary medicine are largely focused around veterinarians in training, maybe younger generation veterinarians, usually on a kind of one-off or in a smaller group setting. But you just mentioned, like, what are the support systems that are in place? So can we talk about those? Can you tell us about the support systems in government veterinarian workplaces?
Well, I certainly can. I think there's also something just that I wanted to bring out around wider society. Because I think we're all far more familiar with the sort of the challenges of mental well-being, the sheer pace that we're all working at. And actually, there's quite limited downtime. And I was just speaking to a colleague who's a veterinary educator earlier today. And we talked about that need for having the downtime, especially when you're a new grad, to assimilate all of the things that are happening. So if you're going, whether that's in government vets, if you're veterinary medicine, if you're going, you know, between jobs really rapidly, or you're doing consult after consult, if you don't have that downtime, the opportunity to assimilate and reflect is lost.
Yes.
And we also know we all work in businesses, and we all know that the bottom line is really important. Whether even if it's a government vet, you're still working with businesses. So I think that framework is really important. But this is where I have really found that there's so much that we can do to be supportive. So first of all, I'm going to talk about my workplace, and then I can talk a little bit about the Federation of Vets of Europe, because we've done some really great stuff as well.
Yes.
So my workplace is award-winning. first up, we won a BVA, British Veterinary Association, Wellbeing Award in 2023. And in part, that was because of the support networks that we have in place, because of the flexible working, because of the way we actually build our network and support each other and celebrate success. And it's so easy for us to remember the bad thing in a day, isn't it? And actually, we need to celebrate success. And I'm really proud of the BVA, because they made that award not just clinical workplaces. They had an award for non-clinical workplaces as well. It's just so important. And I just wanted to just do a little bit of celebrating success. So we, every year, run a Vet of the Year and Meat Hygiene Inspector of the Year award, like a lovely shiny cup, which it's just great. And this cup has been going for many years, and in fact was won in 2001 by that vet who stopped the line when foot and mouth disease was suspected in a pig abattoir. So, you know, there's a really direct connection there. But we have about 80 vets in our organisation, and the nominations for Vet of the Year come from members of our organisation. They could be fellow veterinarians, but often they are from other parts of the business. And I've just sent the letters to the 18 nominees out of about 80 vets that we received this year. And I've just had such heartwarming emails back saying, you know, things like, you know, I didn't need the external validation. Comes back to that shame thing, doesn't it? Because I'm really proud of what I do and I know I make a difference. But honestly, I've just been so, you know, energized and delighted and honored to have received this feedback. And so, you know, there was a combination there of going, actually, I do really respect what I do. I don't feel shame. But actually, to get that validation is just really, really important. I'm going to pause there, check whether you want to ask anything else, but then I'm going to come on to some of the FVE work as well.
Well, I just really love the point too around celebrating our successes, because in the workplace, I find that that's extremely potent as a small team leader myself. But I learned that technique for myself I was taught that in a leadership coaching as a way to lead myself as an individual. Mm-hmm. And so it's absolutely something that anyone can implement. If you go to bed every night and say, what's one thing I did great today? That you can celebrate your own successes if you're in a workplace that isn't already doing that. And that's a culture that can be grown from the ground up, so to speak.
Yes. And I think, you know, some jobs are easier to celebrate those little successes. And if you don't actually have the small, I completed this, successes, which our brains love to complete something, don't they? Like a little feeling of serotonin rush. It's like, great, I've done it, tick on your little box. But we certainly, in this sort of more policy development world, the world that I now live in, we often have a really long time scale to see what your success is. Have to break it down, otherwise you would just feel completely not overwhelmed, because you're like, here's the plan, but it's like, am I really getting anywhere? And actually you are, but you have to break it down for yourself sometimes.
Exactly. And correct me if I'm wrong, which is absolutely possible, but this is a little bit in the direction that some of the well-being initiatives at FEE are going as well, right? Like VetJoy is sort of also based on the idea that we can celebrate ourselves, so to speak, or find joy in the normal working day, in the spaces that we're already in, and not in a way that everything has to be fixed before we all feel okay. Is that tell me more.
I think that's a great intro. So let me tell you more. By the way, I hope I'm not speaking too quickly. I have a terrible habit to do that when I get excited. So I'm trying to be calm.
Not to worry.
We have a number of working. So the Federation of Vets of Europe is a representative organization. I'm just going to do this because I've got to make it really clear how many vets we represent. We have, I think it's 38, could be 39 member countries. From all over the Council of Europe membership. And our members overall mean that we represent 330,000 vets across Europe. That's really powerful. And we do a lot of work understanding, you know, the state of the profession. We do surveys and so on. We also have a number of working groups. And actually, I'm not a member of this working group, but I'm a beneficiary of it. So we have the Mental Wellbeing and DEI Working Group, Diversity. Now, this is always a good one. I like to use it, equity, but there are all sorts of different words for the E, and inclusiveness. And what that group has done is a number of things, and you've mentioned VetJoy. So what it's done is it's set up VetJoy, really looking at, you know, making the veterinary workplace more joyful. And we have an annual award, which again is for both clinical and non-clinical workplaces, and I'm super proud. Although, can I just be really clear, I was not involved in either the application or the judging. I'm super proud that the FSA, my workplace, won one of the inaugural awards last year. Julie, you were there at the awards ceremony, and you know, it's so joyful to be able to recognize all of those good workplaces. Now, I felt particularly excited because one of my colleagues from college was one of the other winners. Her workplace, which is a clinical workplace, large clinical workplace, was also a winner. And I think, you know, for me, I just was terribly overexcited because I was just like, this is why I am part of this profession. This is, I mean, it's not the only thing I need for validation, but isn't it a great way to validate and celebrate what we do? So that's the awards. But also the VetJoy has set up a number of other initiatives. And one of them is Vet for a Day, photo competitions, you know, really engaging pre-university people, students to think about careers in veterinary medicine. But also they have mentoring programs, and they have coaching vouchers. And they are available to both individuals and workplaces. We should probably put that link into the chat or whatever it is that we call it on the podcast for VetJoy. And then, you know, anyone who is you know, working in the beverage profession can have a look at those opportunities. And I can just, I really strongly recommend that people consider putting themselves forward to get these coaching vouchers, to go for mentoring, or putting your workplace forward for an award. Just the process of going through it is celebrating itself. You know, you may win at the end of it.
Well, and I just want to underscore this if I can. I'm going to put my specialist hat on for a minute because you know how intense the specialists can be, passionately intense about science, right? Like, talk about geeking out. We're expert geek outers, if that's a word.
Well, it's definitely two words, even if it...
There you go. But, you know, some people, when we talk about well-being, you know, it can feel like it's warm and fuzzy and that maybe there's not necessarily meat on the bones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, through my own work and of course, diving into Brené Brown, and there's a lot of researchers out there, mm-hmm. this is actually brain science. It may sound fluffy or woo-woo, but there's actually a lot of neuroscience to back up that these things do make a difference in your feeling of fulfillment and contentment with your profession, which directly impact mental health and well-being. So I do want to just tie it back to, there is a lot of scientific evidence out there for my specialist crowd mm-hmm. that might be more tangible and more engaging for them. That's certainly how I kind of fell into this path, was literally neurotransmitters and the science side.
I mentioned serotonin, didn't I?
Exactly.
But I also wanted to add something else about measurable. So I often reflect back on the week that I've had, and this week I was in Brussels and we were celebrating 20 years of EPRUMA, which is the European Partnership on Responsible Use of Medicines in Animals. I hope I've got that right. And their 20-year celebration had a number of MEPs and others, you know, speaking about the future use, antimicrobial resistance, prevention, responsible use, but not just for antimicrobials, you know, across the whole range of parasiticides and so on. But one of the things that one of the speakers said was, what's measurable is doable and done. And one of the things that we do in the civil service, in the government here in the UK, is we run an annual civil service people survey. And it's annual. And it's the same questions every year. And we have done analysis by the veterinary profession now for 5 years. And we have tracked how our vets feel in a whole range of well-being areas. I'm going to be honest with you, we're government. Pay and conditions always comes really low. Very little we can do about that. But on the other engagement scores, and you know, that's sort of well-being scores, you know, PERMA indexes and indices and things like that, we have shown, you know, gradual, well, quite a leap at first, but then gradual improvements. Now, I think we'll get to a plateau. And then that's really difficult. So what do you do next? Mm. But it's like responsible use of antimicrobials, isn't it? You know, we get the low hanging fruit first, and then you have to work harder. So just because we've won awards doesn't mean to say that we're resting on our laurels. We're going to have to work harder to keep that well-being right for front and center of the work that we do.
And I love where you're going with this, because another place that, you know, when we were preparing for this conversation that we talked about really wanting to make sure that we got to was the less low-hanging fruit of how we perceive ourselves, how we talk to and about ourselves. And this is a place where it does require awareness and attention to our habits. But I think this is a really impactful thing, not only as an individual, but as an organization, or in our case, as two organizations that work quite closely together. Do you have a comment on that? Is there anything? I think this is also backed in science, but it can easily get esoteric, and I would like to make it more tangible for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, because it can get sort of quite esoteric. It can get quite theoretical, but it's about framing. And this is something that through my coaching, I often have to reframe things. And I often talk to my colleagues about, okay, so you're really frustrated about this. Let's reframe that and go, where's the opportunity here? Mm. Or perhaps, you know, like looking from that sort of empathetic perspective, like, okay, so this person felt really as though they were stopping you from doing something, but what did they want? What was their objective? Why were they in that position? And so, you know, in terms of both reflecting on ourselves, we talked about I made a mistake versus I'm bad, mm-hmm. but also is thinking about how that individual feels, where you can get those outcomes, those shared outcomes, because actually, when it boils down to it, most of society is actually looking for very similar outcomes. You know, mm-hmm. if you're in clinical practice and you see a dog, the owner wants their dog to get better. Now, that might not always be possible, but that's where you understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can, you know, frame and reframe their frustrations, which they might be trying to take out on you as an individual, to understand why they're doing that. So I don't know whether that's answered your question, Junie, but it's certainly gone in another direction.
Well, I think that is, you know, one of the places that we wanted to touch on, particularly because, okay, we're creating awareness around the fact that well-being and mental health and veterinary medicine are things that can still be improved and probably still need to be improved. I think we can easily go so far as to say that. But I also wanted to talk about, we already did touch on what FEE is doing, and there are things going on with BVA and in your workplace as examples. Mm-hmm. What we are doing about this and how we are going forward and what more we can do. But I think too, you know, really coming back to the point about communication, open mm-hmm. communication, hopefully nonviolent communication, you know, it's not just about awareness. In some situations, mm-hmm. it's about education. In some situations, it's about mm-hmm. empathy. But I think, you know, you know me and my work at EBVS, I'm very focused on communications in all forms. But the word behind communication is community.
Yes.
And I think this is another point we wanted to get to. We're already a little bit over 30 minutes. So
I knew this would happen.
Yes. So maybe we go ahead and talk a little bit about how community is part of the solution. But I think, yeah. You know, let's do that organically, because that's there's so much there that could be said.
And maybe that feels like a really nice way to bring this together as well, doesn't it, as a podcast. So I talked earlier about the fact that I work in a non-traditional part of the profession in government veterinary services, and that actually the rest of the profession, certainly in the UK, might question those choices. But one of the things that really, really has helped is to raise awareness across the profession about the work that we do. So then, that is interesting. Maybe I'd be interested in that, but at least I know what you do and I can value and respect it. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I have found is just so valuable, and I just really recommend to people to consider, and you do have to invest in it. Sometimes it's hard to find the extra time and the brain space to do it, but it's being part of the professional network. Your network can be small, you know, within practices or within an area, or it could be quite large, like being a member of the British Veterinary Association, being a member of FVE, and really feeling part of that wider profession. So, you know, that investment and engagement always makes me feel very happy to be part of the profession. And I was speaking to one of my FE colleagues about this, and we both agreed that with the ever-changing and increasing demands of society on all of us, you know, not just the veterinary profession, all of us, being part of a community is probably more important than ever. You know, you're going through the same things, you can share your experiences, not in a way that says, oh, we're victims, this is terrible, you know, but in a really positive way that we can actually go, we're all in this together. How are we going to steer this ship to a safe shore?
Yes, I love that. There's two things specifically that you said in that soundbite that I really want to touch on. And the first is, if there's anybody listening who is available the first week of April, EBVS is having a congress where there is a workshop you can come and participate in around welfare and well-being. It's specifically targeted to residents and diplomats because I think this is a tricky balance for specialists, but it's the same story as young grads, new grads coming out of vet school. You've had some sort of structure of support, whether it was, customized and perfect for your needs or not. There's been a structure. And then you might end up in a situation coming out of graduation, coming out of internship, coming out of residency, where that support structure looks entirely different or potentially doesn't exist at all. And so these are conversations that, we know anytime there's a transition in somebody's life, mental health, well-being can be disrupted. So these are places that we really want to be aware of, attentive to, and see what we can do. This is exactly the point of the workshop, is how can we make it better? How can we come together as a group and look for solutions? So please, if you're available first week of April, anybody listening, come join us. I'll drop a link as well as a link to VetJoy in the show notes or in the description. But Jane, you also said something that I think is so essential to this conversation, is value. And it's very easy for veterinarians to feel that our value is maybe not perceived. And I think this is linked so intimately with the feeling of shame or any sort of mental health disruption. And celebrating our successes is one small piece of the puzzle towards feeling that. But I agree with you. I think what you said about being part of community, whether that's FVE, whether that's EBVS, hopefully it could be both. There's so many opportunities. That is a great place where value can be reflected back and where we can push the value of our entire profession, as diverse as it is, forward. Do you have any concluding remarks that you want to follow on that? I feel like my comment was rather circular.
Well, I think one of the things I often say is people often count the cost and forget the value. And we as vets bring so much value. We're often told we're costly. But if we can reframe it and think about the value we bring to the animals that we look after and to the society that we serve, I think that reframing really does help us to be part of that community and to really address some of those challenges that we all face in terms of how we feel about ourselves and we feel about our profession.
That was so beautiful. I think that we should wrap on that because I just don't think it can get any more beautiful as a conclusion and an invitation than that statement. Are you comfortable with that? Do you feel good with it?
I'm very happy that we closed there, Julie. I could honestly speak for the next 3 hours, you know that, but we really do have to respect our listeners and not keep them online for too long.
Well, what I'm going to do, Jane, is I'm also going to include the webpage I found about you because you have a beautiful quote about leadership at the top of that description. And it's a very personal piece. So I'm going to encourage people to jump over there. Anyone who has worked with me knows how passionate I am about leadership. So I just so resonate with that. And I hope people will check it out. And I know we will be talking sooner rather than later, but I just want to thank you on behalf of EBVS, but also on behalf of the profession for donating your time. You don't have to be here. We're so lucky that you're taking time out of your Friday evening to talk about shame. We're so lucky to have people like you working to better the conditions of our veterinarians, our animals, and the people that own them and love them and take care of them. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Julie. I have really enjoyed it.
Good. We'll catch up soon. Thanks to our listeners for being here. And I'm going to drop plenty of links in the show notes. So I hope everybody geeks out as much as I do. Thanks, everyone.